This program was first broadcast on Planet FM, Community Access Media in Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland. You're hearing it on accessmedia.nz thanks to Erirangi Te Motu.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. Just before we start the show, my thoughts and prayers go out to the victims and the families of the tragedy on Thursday in Mount Maunganui. Seriously, it's tragic, and in a country like this, you know, it really means a lot, obviously, and also to the first responders, the police, the fire service, the ambulance service. Yes, it's their jobs, but they're human after all, and they will be feeling it as well. Welcome everyone. We're going to start off, as I said on the preview earlier on, we're going to start off with Super Rugby, and we will be previewing all six New Zealand-based franchises, and of course we'll do, this week we're doing three, next week we'll do the three of the Upper North Island, but we're going to start it off with the defending champions, the Crusaders. Here to talk to us, he has been the voice of Crusaders Rugby for so long, and a fantastic radio commentator, fantastic bloke. Please welcome, and I would say, a very belated Happy New Year to you, Brian Ashby.
Yeah, cheers, Eamon. It sort of creeps up, doesn't it? We're just about in February, but yeah, Happy New Year to you too.
Yeah, it feels a bit weird because I think we were speaking on Boxing Day when I was down in Christchurch, and you were down there. Yeah. You were on the way to for holiday, and so yeah, it's a pity. Next time I'm in Christchurch, I definitely need to catch up with a cup of coffee. But let's talk about this Crusader side, the defending champions. Looking at the squad, there are 18 current or former All Blacks in this squad, and they have built a good team under Rob Penny. Rob Penny, when he first took over, much maligned, didn't have the cattle he wanted. Then next season, he turned it round for a Super Rugby victory. I look at this back line. I look at the back line here, and it is a... It's a brilliant back line, Brian. Yeah, Will Jordan, Sevi Reese, you know, Vanaki, who's proven to be has proven his worth at Super Rugby level. But then we go into probably the biggest jigsaw of the lot, the midfield. You've got David Harvili, who's the current Crusaders captain, Braden Enor, who has never let the Crusaders down, Dallas McLeod, a former All Black himself, and of course, Big Lester Fiana Nuku. Now, the big question is, Brian, where does Rob Penny play Big Lester? Does he keep him in the midfield? Because depending on who is the All Black coach, they may be looking at Lester as an option in the midfield, or does he play out on that wing, Brian?
Yeah, it's a great problem to have, isn't it? And, I think, you know, looking at the depth of the squad and perhaps the, the wing options, it might be that, when you're on a match day squad, you sort of mix and match, and where someone starts a game might not be where they finish. So it may well be that he starts a game at on the wing and finishes the game in the midfield. So, or vice versa. But I would suspect, given the depth of talent, that he'll probably start the games on the wing. But it might just be that, you know, you look at perhaps... Well, certainly Braden Enor and to a lesser degree Dallas McLeod have had a bad run of injuries in recent times and can be a little bit brittle. It might be that that opportunity comes. And that's always the way, isn't it? There are always going to be injuries and so on. But I think, you know, you probably want to just get his best players out on the park. Isn't it funny? You know, 12 months ago, hand on heart, a lot of very learned people in New Zealand rugby, but there wouldn't be, I don't know anybody who at the start of 2025 would have predicted at the start of 2026 that Rob Penny would be the defending Super Rugby champion coach and Scott Robertson would be unemployed. So
unbelievable, wasn't it?
Things change quickly in rugby.
And of course, then we look at the first 5-8. Obviously, next season, the Crusaders will have Richie Mwanga there, but Rivers Raihana really got better and better and better every game he started for the Crusaders. So he really locks down that number 10 for me. But I look at the loose forwards, and we've got the usuals, Leo Willie, we've got Callum Grace, we've got Ethan Blackadder, but Tom Christie, he becomes a big loss. Can Corey Callow, who many are picking as to be a breakout for the Crusaders, can he fill either of those three roles?
Well, yeah, he can, and he was outstanding. He's probably one of the best players in the NPC last year until he got injured. He had an outstanding year, and Ethan Blackadder. So they do have options. They're different types of player to Tom Christie, who they're up there on the tackle count. But Christie was an absolute machine. There was no one else in New Zealand rugby who really played that style of game that he played. So things, you know, are going to be a little bit different there, certainly. I think they can fill the gap, and there's good depth in that loose forward mix that they've got there. A lot of depth, you know. Christian Leo, what a breakout, you know, he's had over the past couple of years. Just going back to the first five scenario, Raihana, you know, 2 years ago was an absolute disaster, and you're right, he was superb last year. But also before he got injured, the man wearing that jersey was Taha Kemara.
And
he was outstanding as well, you know. So he was the one with the shoe in there. So they really, after, you know, 2 years ago, it was the worst scenario since 1996 in the number 10 jersey, which, you know, has been a real strength, the biggest strength in some ways of the Crusaders over the years. It was a disaster, but suddenly those two last year were brilliant. And interestingly, just on the inside backs, it just shows a little bit of the big calls that somebody like Rob Penny is prepared to make. Here's Mitchell Drummond with 150 games for the Crusaders, and he's only in the wider training squad now, the former All Blacks. Still only 31, but they're prepared to make a big call. There's no sentiment, and somebody of, you know, Mitchell's experience can't make the full squad anymore.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Yeah, I also look at the locks now. Scott Barrett, this may change, Brian, as things are changing, and it's an ever-involving, changing rugby world here in New Zealand, but he's having a rest, bit of a sabbatical. Sifoun, Antonio Sifoun became a very good player for the Crusaders, but the guy I'm actually keeping an eye on is Liam Jack.
Yeah, well, you know, his dad, Graham Jack, was Crusader in 98, the year they won the first title. His uncle, obviously, Chris Jack, and, you know, a good long-term All Black, very good All Black lock. So, yeah, a rookie year, training wheels on, obviously, and, you know, I think largely speaking it will be look and learn. He'll get his opportunities, but, yeah, you, when you've got a surname like Jack, you're kind of in the spotlight a wee bit, aren't you?
So,
he comes with, you know, pretty good credentials and is highly regarded, but I think they'll look to perhaps ease him in the second half of the season just as he, gets a feel for, you know, how they go about their business.
Potentially more game time for someone like Jamie Hannah.
I would think so. A little more experience. These guys have got a season or two under their belt and so on. Dominic Gardner will be an interesting one. Predominantly a loose forward. Another one with pedigree, of course, his dad is Angus Gardner and still works in the Crusaders organisation. But he can cover second row very effectively as well. The Scott Barrett scenario with his sabbatical, you know, people like to have a bit of a crack at Scott Barrett, but, you know, last year he didn't play his best rugby in Super Rugby. couple of times there were a few questions being asked, and he came out and he had one absolute belter of a game around about round six. I can't recall who it was against, and it sort of calmed everyone down for a wee bit. But I think when he comes back at the back end of the campaign, refreshed, rested a little bit longer, good conditioning window and so on, I think, you know, he will, we might see Scott Barrett back at his very best again.
Absolutely. And of course, that front row, well, you basically got an All Black front row, and probably you've got Tamaiti Williams, Fletcher Newell, George Bauer. You've got a couple of very good young props, and you've got a couple of All Black hookers, and George Bauer, and of course, Cody Taylor. And many, if we hear the rumour mill going around rugby, many would say he is the next All Black captain in waiting.
Yeah, well, to be honest, that's not a rumour that I've heard, to be honest, but he certainly does have captaincy credentials, and he's captained the Crusaders in the past. And, you know, I've only ever seen, you know, I think he's only ever played a couple of bad tests for the All Blacks there. There was a scenario about 3 years ago where just a couple in a row, he was a wee bit off, but you get, 100% plus every time that guy takes the field. And he just lives around the corner from me, but he's a guy who a real sort of follow me out of the trenches, lads. Let's get the job done, and loves rugby. I was at a club game a few years ago when they in the middle of the season when the All Blacks was sort of in between campaigns, and he was grumpy. He wanted to be out there playing, but he wasn't allowed to play. Just if there's a game of rugby on, he wants to be involved with the sleeves up. So he's a great character, and just a good, hard-working blue-collar rugby player. There's a lot to be admired about the way he goes about his game.
You know, when Rob Penny picks a team, one of the first names he puts down is Cody Taylor, Brian.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah.
The guy's a fantastic rugby player, and he's got a fantastic attitude. Now, looking at this, they are the defending champion, and Rob Penny, I have to say, and I was very happy for Rob Penny after all the crap he got a season before. He came back and proved his coaching credentials. Can they go back to back? Can they bring another Super Rugby to a new stadium?
Well, just briefly turn the clock back 2 years ago, people ignored what a terrible study. I've never seen injury toll like it, there was just nothing went right for him. And there's no doubting the guy's rugby credentials. So it was pretty hard. I've known him since I was sort of 9 or 10 years old, Pens, and we played together as young guys and stuff. And he is a tremendous coach, great developer of talent. Can they go back to back? Well, look, you know, I'm always a little bit guarded in my views on this at the start of the season. It is a very, very good squad that they do have. I like the look of the Hurricanes. Warner Dearnes is a wonderful, wonderful signing for him, for them.
I've been waiting for him to come into Super Rugby for a long time. I was sort of hoping the Crusaders would have nabbed him, but
And obviously the Chiefs are going to be very good, and then probably the Highlanders are the only team I sort of probably wouldn't rate too much of a chance, just to make up of their squad.
I love
watching the Highlanders, but it's always a very much the history of them is very much a cut and paste squad. So, you know, I think can the Crusaders do it? They're going to be there or thereabouts. I'll confidently say that they'll make the semi-finals. Knockout football, the old cliche, anything can happen. They will be there or thereabouts. Are they the favourites? Let's give them the favourites tag simply as defending champions. But I'm certainly not sort of saying confidently that they are going to go back to back, because I think
it's a hard one to call.
You've got improving Australian sides, and you've got, you know, the other New Zealand franchises are very, very good. It just comes down to very, very small margins. And, as Todd Blackadder used to say, it's a pretty short drop from halo to noose, you know. So that's the way it is. So I think they can go back to back. But I think there's also an element of luck involved in terms of injuries and those sorts of things. They're well positioned to get the job done again. I'll go, that's as far as I'll go with that one.
Very diplomatic. I know a selection year coming up, and you've got every political party after you right now, Brian.
Have I?
Yeah, well, you...
oh, I'm playing the political, okay, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, sitting on the fence, very centrist.
No, I think you've probably done the right thing, because a lot of people don't realise Super Rugby is not won in the first four or five rounds. Super Rugby is basically won... you basically see where this is happening later on in the rounds, and you know. I think the big thing for Crusaders fans, obviously the big weekend of the Super Round to Christchurch, already a sellout, and I know people come in down from this part of the world, and they are looking so forward to coming to the stadium, and I think we will say goodbye during the early parts of the year to the scaffold built stadium and go into a new state-of-the-art stadium.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. You know, it's a long wait. And the city is certainly buzzing at the moment. There's a real high. The Metro Sports Hub has opened. And the centre of town is being redeveloped, albeit sort of 10 years too late. And the council, they sort of pat themselves on the back at the moment. They've actually been the biggest handbrake in the whole thing. But, look, I'm not going to miss Apollo Projects Stadium. It's certainly served a purpose. And, look, big ups to the people that made that happen. And it's very unfashionable to pat Jerry Brownlee on the back, but he drove that. And it was hugely important for the city that we, got something like that to feel good about. We've had to stick with it way longer than we should have, but that's another story. Interesting little fact about that, to fit that in there, the field is actually about a metre narrower than a regular rugby field. So occasionally when you see a first five kick the ball out on the full or visiting thing, they working it out, a kickoff from halfway or whatever. So, well, I thought I hit that right. Well, the small margins, the field is actually marginally narrower than a regular rugby field. So a few people, it's not a well-known fact, but people have been caught out over the years by that sort of little, idiosyncrasy in terms of the measurements of the field.
Absolutely. Well, I think... Well, Brian, I want to thank you for making yourself available, as you always do to me, Brian, when you're free. And, of course, another bike race this afternoon, will it be, Brian?
Yeah, I'm going to get out in the next hour, so it's blowing a gale out there at the moment, so I'm not particularly looking forward to it, but I suppose you have to go out in the ordinary stuff to get a little bit better, not that I get much better.
Always good having a chat. Always good having a chat, Brian. Have a wonderful weekend, and thank you so much for making yourself available. Cheers, thanks.
Right,
cheers,
go
mate.
Well.
Bye. Brian Ashby, what a good bloke. Absolute champion bloke. And, wow, his knowledge on Crusaders rugby is brilliant. Well, next we're going to go down to the South Island, and we're going to hopefully have Paul Miller on the other side.
Some of the boys got it into their heads by moving up north to follow the bread. But that ain't for me. That kind of thing just don't wait. This is one southern boy who ain't crossing the straits. Now I might not be rich, but a lot of things down here looking girls and the best damn beer. So you can keep your Queen City with your cocktails and cool. Give me a beer and a seven with the boys shooting pool. 'Cause I'm a southern man. Well, I'm so pretty. I got the south in my blood. I'll be here till I'm damn well dead. 'Cause I'm a southern. I got the south in my blood, and I'm gonna be here till I'm damn well dead.
Okay, guys, we're just having problems raising Paul Miller. It's a bit disappointing. I'd arranged this interview on Thursday, so I'll keep on trying him, and hopefully in the next few minutes we can get this sorted for us. It's a bit. I'm hoping that our phones haven't gone down. It would. This is unbelievable if it has, because it's the second time in a row. So I won't be too happy. So yeah. So let me just try that.
I can tell by the look in your eyes that the storm's coming back again. I can hear in the sound of your voice that you're starting to crack. After all of this time, I'd be lying if I said that I knew how to do it just right. 'Cause the truth is I lose it sometimes, and I need you standing there to remind me that I should say goodbye to all the clouds in my mind. Oh, I know it's been a bumpy road. Keep thinking there's so far to go, but take a look around, it's amazing. If we made it here, then we made it. No better place I'd rather be. All of my people here with me. Never took the time to celebrate it. But if we made it here, then we made it. Oh. Days we would say that we're gonna make it out. How crazy would it be if they could see us now? 'Cause we used to dream so damn big to be in a place that looks just like this. Open your eyes or you just might miss everything that we'd always wished for. I think it's time to look around. Keep thinking there's so far to go, but take a look around, it's amazing. If we made it here, then we made it. No better place I'd rather be. All of my people here with me. Never took the time to celebrate it. 'Cause if we made it here, then we made it.
Still trying to get hold of Paul Miller. Seems to, his phone seems to be dead. I'll keep on trying. I'm sorry about this, people. I'm a little bit peeved about it too. So, yeah.
Me and all my friends, we're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. We just feel like we don't have the means to rise above.
Well, welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Hey, listen, still trying to raise Paul Miller. So I'll keep on trying to raise him during the breaks for the next part. But we're going to go straight to the Hurricanes, and here to speak to us, renowned rugby commentator, comments man, and true Wellingtonian, the one and only Matt Buck. G'day, Matt. How you going?
Yeah, good morning. Good. What was I going to say? Happy New Year to you. Great to be back. Rugby just around the corner, and great to chat to you, and hope your listeners enjoy it.
Yeah, so do I, because the simple reason is that it should be a it's going to be an interesting season, and of course the Hurricanes. You know, they've been backed heavily as one of the favourites in this competition. So I look at this back line, and I think Clark Laidlaw has got so many options available to him. He's got so many options available to him. Now, you look at it, Ruben Love. Now, is he a fullback or a first 5'8"? Kanina Naalo, Josh Morby's back. What a fantastic back three you've got. But then you look at the midfield. This is where the big issues are going to come in for Clark Laidlaw. He's got Billy Proctor. Obviously, he'll be your centre, simple as that. Jordy Barrett, where do you play him at? Is he a second 5'8", or is he a fullback? Because some decisions around that has to be made. Obviously, we've got a change in All Blacks and coaching coming in, whether they see him more as a fullback. And even if he was to go to fullback, you've also got a good replacement in Riley Higgins.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you sit down and put your best Hurricanes back line on the field, I suppose you've got you start at halfback with Cam Roygaard, a little bit injury prone at times, but there's not a lot of cover there. Though Ewan's there and Inardi are pretty inexperienced players, so Roygaard holds the key there to play long minutes. Then you sit at first five and you've got a pretty steady hand in Brett Cameron, and as you say, I mean, you make a great point, Ruben Love, where does he play? In the centre pairing, you've got, if Jordy Barrett wasn't back, you'd have Riley Higgins and Billy Proctor and Baylen Sullivan and Josh Teemu probably being your backups, although Sullivan can play very much second, centre and wing. But Jordy Barrett is back. And then, as you say, in the back line, Kenny Naholo and Josh Morby will probably start as your wingers, but Punavai is a pretty good player. And then you've got the decision of who you play at fullback. So I would go, if it was me and I was picking the team for the final tomorrow, let's say they made the final, I would play Jordy Barrett at 15 and Ruben Love at 10. And we always talk about whether the All Black selectors or the head office get in the way of all this. But I think more and more players will arrive, a.k.a. Jordy Barrett will arrive at Hurricanes HQ and say, I would prefer to play this position. And I wonder that he's played so much at 12 that he now sees himself as a world-class 12, as we all know he is, and that's the position he wants to play. It's unfortunate, but injuries do occur, we know that. But as you say, they've got riches to choose from, but it's about getting the best players on the park at the right time of the season. Billy Proctor's had his injury concerns, Ruben Love, Kenny Naholo's coming back from long-term injury. Brett Cameron's had a long layoff. He's back late last season. Of course, they've lost Harry Godfrey for the whole season, probably. Callum Harkin comes in question. But it's really piecing together your best back line at the best time. That would be... So to answer your question, I would probably play Ruben Love at 10, Higgins at 12, Proctor at 13, and Jordy Barrett at 15. And with Roygaard at 9... Geez, you've got a pretty good back line, that is. And it's probably, as I listed the players this morning, going to be backed up by a pretty now experienced, once again, if you can get them all on the field, forward pack with some pretty classy players who are now starting to get some pretty good All Black experience as well.
Yeah, and they are getting experience. And, you know, Cam Roygaard, he's probably one of the best halfbacks in the world at the moment.
Yep.
And you have a look at this back line. Like, when we spoke last year, we probably thought, well, they're there or thereabouts. But I look at this back line, it's really, once you have Jordy Barrett in that back line, he's such a world-class player. And you mentioned, you know, when he'd done his stint at Leinster, which I think really helped his play as well too, he was used mostly as a fullback. And this and I think, you know, wherever the All Blacks go, Matt, they may need to do that. Now, I'm looking at your loose forward trio. What a loose forward trio. GPC Kariffi, Peter Lackey, obviously you got Devin Flanders, Braden O.C., Brad Shields. Wow, that's an all-star. That's an all-star loose forward combinations you've got there, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And for the Hurricanes, we've always been blessed with, ever since Sawalo, Jerry Collins, these sort of guys, Chris Marceau, we've been blessed with great loose forwards. And that's something we've never had a shortage of. But I think we've got loose forwards now at pretty much at the peaks of their power. Kariffi, we know, will be the number seven, and he is a dynamic player. Once again, his loading will be interesting. Peter Lackey showed on the All Black Tour at the end of the year how good he can be, but they'll build on that experience. I think he is a genuine eight. And there's a lot of talk around Devin Flanders, Hurricanes HQ in the pre-season, if not winning the beat test in the forwards, or the Bronco test, not far away from being first or second. He's come back fit and strong. He went on the All Black, BA Tour, call it what you want. And was very impressive. And there's talk of him maybe being a bolter to go to South Africa on the All Black Tour. So, again, if we go back to the final was tomorrow, I'd be looking at a Kariffi-Flanders 7-6 combo with Lackey at 8. But, again, as you say, you've got that Brandon Uatsi, that Brad Shields experience to come off the bench and really add impact when needed. So, again, get them all on the park, get them fit. The loose forwards won't be a problem for the Hurricanes.
Yes, and, you know, it's just, you're talking about that South African tour. They'll be taking up to 46 players on it. You know, is that all? You know, if we, the way New Zealand rugby has is management, it's management big. We could end up being a couple of the baggage men if we're not careful there, Matt.
Well, unfortunately, something you're passionate about, something I'm very passionate about. If you're taking that sort of number on a long tour, and, you know, as you say, it could be up to 46, it could be two genuine squads of 23, it might even be higher than that, then that dilutes down, and we keep on diluting down. And, of course, the only thing that gets affected is our beloved club rugby competition with both Auckland and Wellington. So, although this tour is very important, and I see that they've got a money-making game up in America now in Baltimore and things like that. I don't like the dilution of the product, but there's a lot of opportunity for guys, if I talk about the Hurricanes, to put their best foot forward in Super Rugby, to put themselves in the shop window. I talk about a guy like Devin Flanders. We'll go through the props and lots and hookers shortly.
Yeah, well,
there's a real opportunity this year, and as we all know, with a new guy selecting the team.
Well, that's it, and we're done. Well, it hasn't been announced yet, but I think we've got a sneaking suspicion on who it's going. I think you'd be, if he doesn't get it, then if anyone who picks someone else should also buy a lotto ticket. I look at the locks now. I think you've got the buy of the season there. Warner Dearns, the Japanese international lock. Yep. I remember first seeing him against the All Blacks years back, and I thought, God, why isn't any Super Rugby franchise trying to get this guy over to play Super Rugby? Because he has all the skills, and he's not only his line out jumping, his ball skills for a locker are absolutely amazing. And then he has got backup and Walker Lawiri, and of course Delaney. So I think this guy Warner Dearns, he is fantastic, mate.
Yeah, so again, we go back to that question of you playing the final tomorrow. Warner Dearns and Isaiah Walker-Lewery. And I think Walker-Lewery's grown as a player. He used to do some stupid stuff. Was known as being a bit of a lazy trainer and had always had the skills, but I think he's put his head down, backside up, and works very hard. Warner Dearns, when you start getting that, the competitiveness around positions or around selection, I think players work off each other, and I think Isaiah Walker-Lewery probably will see Dearns as a threat, a good threat, of course. Don't know much about Tom Allen. Concerns around Delaney with his ongoing concussion issues. Talk around Wellington that he's probably only one or two away from deciding whether he's studying to be an architect by trade, a very, very you know, done well at university. So I just don't know about him. Terrific player, can play six or lock, probably prefer him at lock. And then a toiler in Hugo Plummer. And Plummer is a guy, again, we talk about club rugby, who battled away for Tawa, got his opportunity for Wellington under some pretty good coaching, and then got an opportunity last year at the Highlanders, came back, and along with Alama Iremia's boy, Yakira Iremia, were very good for Wellington and a losing side most of the time in the locking department. A real toiler, does the basics well, and he'll be a really good backup for, and very rarely injured, a very good backup for those Warner Dearns, Delaney and Walker Lewery. But I agree with you, Warner Dearns, looking at the size of him, I was out at NZCIS, the training facility, last week, and looking at the size of him, he's a big body, a big man, but he's also very athletic. So look at him. I think he'll hit the ground running in Super Rugby 2026.
Yeah, he is. He's a man. So, you know, I look at this front row now. For years, for Hurricanes, for the Hurricanes team, they've always struggled at the front, in that type five, and especially in the front row. Well, this year you've got a, how would you say, you've got a heap of good players there now. You know, you've got obviously Mew, you've got Lomax, Tossi, Malifo, and Rakiri Stones. What a good combination of front rows you've got there.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you bang on. In the past, the Hurricanes haven't been known to be the great scrummaging team, but I think you've got six props and four hookers. Now, if I look through that list, there's been some injury concerns nearly around all of them. If I start with Xavier, if I start again in the notes I've written, again, you would probably look at a, because he's so experienced, a starting front row of Amour, of course, Tyrell Lomax and Xavier Newmere. Let's start with that. You've got Palacio Tosi and you've got Tavita Mapaleo, who are great backups. And then you've got a guy like Siali Luaki, superstar at college, is still really learning his craft. Arrived in the Hurricane scene with a bleached blonde hair. He needed that knocked out of him, that sort of stuff. So need to do a bit of growing up, but he's starting to mature into a very good, very, very good prop forward, as they do when they get older. But he's still a bit of an injury concern at times. And it's just getting the guys on the park at the right time at the right season. Asafa Moore has missed a lot of rugby. We know Tyrell Lomax has missed a lot of rugby with these freak injuries he gets. But we need our best players. If the Hurricanes want to win this competition and not just go deep into the competition, they need Lomax and Amour on the field more than not. So key that they do that. As you say, there's experience in the propping stocks and the hooking stocks with Devery and Tupu Tupu as the backups. They're very, very now experienced and good players. Devery, slight issue with his thrown into the line-out. But again, if we can get the players on the park, like most franchises, it's a hard competition. But I think that'll go a long way to winning it, if not just making the finals.
Yeah, and, you know, I think with Clark Laidlaw, he's really building he's built a really good side around him, and a side for the future. I look at, I believe if any chance of winning a Super Rugby title for the Hurricanes, it's now.
I suppose if we look at it, and it's only going off the New Zealand TAB market, and of course all the New Zealand teams, I think except for the Highlanders, are in the top four, if not five, you know, five of the favourites. So again, with the Crusaders and Chiefs, they're currently at $3.25, and that's probably done on last year, and the Crusaders winning, the Chiefs making a couple of finals in a row, then the Hurricanes paying $5.50. They won't mind being in that spot, you know, being the sort of the, I mean, by the sounds, you think they are the favourites, but
yeah.
I don't think they'll want to go in as deep favourites. $5 to win the regular season, and then $1.15 to make the top six. Jeez, would be disappointed if they didn't make the top six.
Oh, yeah.
I think with Laidlaw, you've got a very experienced coach who's still learning his trade. That sounds silly, but
yeah.
I think he's a guy who's always willing to learn. I found him a bit prickly in the seven setup. I don't know why. When I was when I used to interview him. But on the ground at the stadium, he's very personable, and I think he's a more of a relaxed coach. And geez, he's got some experience behind him now. Brad Cooper, son of Colin, out of Taranaki. Jamie McIntosh, the Whopper, as we know,
yep.
Has been there for a while now with his sparring mate, Corey Jane. Bryn Evans talked that he did a wonderful job with the All Black lineout on the European Tour. And I think Tony Johnson said he should be one of the guys that the All Blacks do look keeping. And, of course, the big recruit in Jason Holland, who's back out of that All Black setup, back to. And Laidlaw and him are good mates. So that's a very experienced coaching crew. And I think Laidlaw doesn't mind being, he's a coach that doesn't mind being tested by, like some people would look at him and go, oh, Jason Holland might try and run the place because he used to be the head coach and he's been with the works. I don't think Clark Law will mind being challenged. And just on their sort of, what's it, this fixture list to start with, they start with a bye. That's the easiest week you can have.
Then you can't lose that one, Matt.
No. Well, although you don't get points like you do in the NRL. Moana Pacifica at home, win. Drua away, never know. Tars away, 50-50. Force at Napier, win. Highlanders away, don't know, 50-50. And then the Reds at home, they should go on as favourites. And then they have a bye in round eight. So they don't get to a derby until round six against the Highlanders, but the other game, so they could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They could be 4-6 or 5-6 would be a great start, but their run home's very hard. So look, I think if they can start well, get some players, some games in the leagues for these probably lesser players, and then build their All Blacks back in, I think they're in for a hell of a shout.
And also, when you look at that coaching group, which Clark Laidlaw has got in there, Jamie McIntosh, Corey Jane, there are a couple of blokes that might be, just saying, Matt, might have a tap on the shoulder and say, we've got another job for you with the All Blacks, because they actually were part of that All Blacks 15 that went on that tour. And basically, they're glowing references on Jamie Joseph, both of them, and Jamie Joseph had glowing references on these guys.
Yeah, and I spoke to Clayton McMillan, who I know well, who's now over in Munster, and he coached the New Zealand 18 the year or 2 years prior to Joseph doing it, for 2 years, I should say, and then Joseph picked it up. And Clayton took McIntosh and Corey Jane away with him as well, and spoke of very, in glowing terms. Corey Jane's also always been known as a bit of the clown of the class, but I think as a coach, he knows his stuff. He was always a very naturally talented footballer, and he knows the game. And I think in McIntosh, you see what you get. He's big what he does. And if the All Blacks really wanted to go away from what they've currently got and have a clean out, which could happen, and that does happen, McIntosh and Jamie Joseph, I reckon, will be well, let's say Joseph gets the job, which everyone thinks he's going to. I think McIntosh is the sort of guy that would work very well with Joseph, in that he loves scrummaging, he loves forward play, and that's what he does. And he doesn't worry about what the backs are up to, because when I get down on the stadium turf and they're warming up, he is so intense with those forwards that you just see the passion in his eyes. So, no, I totally agree with you. I reckon there's a lot of cattle in that Hurricanes coaching group that really could get phone calls throughout the year. There's no doubt of that.
And, of course, when you speak about Corey Jane, he's obviously a skills coach, but probably one of the things people tend to forget, very rarely did Corey Jane miss a tackle.
Well, he's also I don't know what the setup is now. He used to talk about skills coach, but he does a lot of work in the defensive side of things. And the Hurricanes under him defensively have been a lot better since he's been involved than they used to be. So I totally agree. Never really used him as tackle. Did the basics well as a rugby player, but also had that flashiness about him. So no. He's impressed me as a coach. I didn't think much of him at the start, but he's impressed me as a coach.
And, you know, when I think, a lot of people said he only got it because he was a former All Black, but he's really done his work. So we might as well call it right now. They're definitely going to be in the top four, the Hurricanes.
Yep.
And Let's hope. Now, just for one thing, I just want to just mention one thing. The stadium. Obviously, Sky Stadium only really one game in Napier. Yep. Is there talk about potentially moving more games out of Wellington? Because the crowds are down.
They're down, bang on. I mean, the last guy to fill Sky Stadium was last week with Ed Sheeran. I mean, you know, maybe we'll get him along every week to warm the crowd up.
I can tell you what, Eden Park didn't do too well. We had the Jehovah's Witness Conference and there were more people there. I bet you Carl Budge was saying, geez, can we bring him along to the first Super Rugby game at Eden Park?
Let's bring it back on track. CEO Evan Lee gone after 10 years. New owner Malcolm Gillies helping out the Wellington Rugby by buying their share, and of course, is the brains and the money behind the NZCIS, the training facility out in Upper Hutt.
Yeah.
He'll want to make changes. I don't think you'll see much this year. The issue you're going to have is how many members generally come along. There's a real split now between club rugby followers and Hurricanes followers. And I say that with honesty, because I am one of those club rugby followers, but I know it's my job to go to Hurricanes games and commentate. Mm-hmm. And I love my Marison Pats Rugby Club, and I love going along to the small grounds on a Saturday and watching them at 2 o'clock and then going for a beer at the club rooms. That's my passion. But, look, I think for a derby, a Chiefs or Crusaders or Blues, if I look at the first game against Moana Pacifica, they're already saying two tickets for the price of one.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I mean, are we looking at 7,000? You know, we're looking at 6,000, depending on what time of the day it is. Where Wellington is going to struggle is when the new Christchurch Stadium opens. I see this year we've got a magnificent test match given to us. Italy.
Surely the All Blacks can't lose against Italy in Wellington.
5 o'clock at night. So, and I really worry that with the new Christchurch Stadium, that Eden Park and Christchurch become the 1-2 punch for the All Blacks, because that's how they make their money. But I'd say, and then the other home game is the next home game is a Red, so it's a pretty slow start for the stadium. And I'd be, if I was Gillies, I'd be happy with an average crowd at the stadium, because outside of the finals of 9,000 to 10,000.
And another thing too, Matt, you know, obviously a lot of the Wellington really relied on the civil service, and a lot of them are gone, a lot of people. And of course, you know, without sounding rude to Wellington Weaver, you can't be Wellington on a good day. Well, when it's windy and raining on a Friday night, you probably find people will rather be at home or in a bar watching the game.
Oh, you're bang on. And I talk of my own self where, for instance, I don't do the All Black test matches in Wellington. That's left to other people to do, and from a sideline perspective. And I just sit at home and watch the All Blacks play. I look outside the window at the moment. It's cricket season, right? All senior cricket and junior cricket's been cancelled today. It's raining. I know that cricket's not the problem at the moment in New Zealand. We've got huge problems in Mount Maunganui and
absolutely.
All those people and all that. But if we talk about sport, you're right about the conditions and the niceties of the Wellington weather. It is tough, but I also think, you know, the Crusaders will have a good season due to the new stadium, and I think that'll be a new Christmas present for most people, so they'll enjoy going on there, I think. The Chiefs will be the Chiefs, and they'll always get that good crowd at Rugby Park for the fit purpose stadium. Highlanders might struggle, and the Blues and the Hurricanes are the ones that really need to. But they've got some marketing to do, and with marketing, I think the easiest thing you can do is get a winning team on the park. We see it with the Phoenix in Wellington. They're having a tough season this year. They lost again last night. And the crowds are down. But when they were winning and they played Melbourne in a semi-final at the stadium, Melbourne Victory only, 2 years ago, the place was, well, the place had 30,000 people in it. So you need a winning team to start with, and if they can win and start well, then hopefully the crowds will come.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, thank you so long. It was supposed to be a quick chat, but I really enjoyed this chat about the Hurricane. Thank you for coming in, for making yourself available and helping me by texting me saying I'm ready now. So that was
no
awesome,
problem.
Mate. Hey, have a great rest of the weekend there, Matt. Cheers, mate.
Okay, buddy. Yeah,
cheers.
Good season. Thank you.
Cheers, bye. Matt Buck, absolutely brilliant bloke. Okay, so next up, we're just going to have a quick chat to Garth Galloway about a bit of cricket. Well, it's one of those days today, people. Live shows, these happen. Garth Galloway didn't realise we were on today. So I'm going to try and raise them very quickly. If not, we're going to go to Seamus Martin a bit early. But in the meantime, if we can't raise Garth during that time, I'll play an old one of our old interviews which we had during the year just to cover the time. So you just give me a second. I'll just try Garth one more time. So, yep. Okay, so it looks like, let's just give me a second.
I am feeling very Olympic today. How about you?
Oh,
Welcome everyone back. Well, we're unable to raise Garth Galloway, so what I'm going to do is I am going to get hold of Seamus Martin, and we're going to go a bit earlier than usual with Seamus, and then we move on to Gordon Bray. Apologies, everyone. These things happen. I just got a text from Garth. Didn't realise we're on today, so obviously a breakdown in communication between myself and Garth. So these things happen. So what I'll do next is I'll get to Seamus Martin from Between Two Beers. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, and I will just, and fortunately we're able to get guests have these, one didn't answer and I thought I'd put down the wrong number, which I didn't, and then the other, what was it, Garth didn't realise we were on today, so there was confusion. Hey, that happens. But we're going to go early to football. Here to join us from Between Two Beers podcast, the world famous Seamus Martin, the Richie McCaw of the Solomon Islands, as he's known. Morning, mate.
That's very kind. Maybe this wild weather in New Zealand is influencing some of these people missing calls. It's been pretty crazy out there, hasn't it? Our thoughts go to those affected as well, don't they?
Yeah, and I said something at the beginning of this show. You're not only to the victims' families, but also, you know, the first responders, Seamus. You know, like, I know everyone says the police, the fire service, the ambulance service, it is their job to do this, but, you know, they're humans after all too, mate.
Well, look, absolutely, and, you know, I've through the podcast world, we've had a chance to talk to a couple of first responders as well, and you definitely some of the things that they are having to deal with in their work environments, pretty heavy stuff. So you're very right there, Eamon. And look, sad times around some of New Zealand, but also an opportunity for sport sometimes to shine through and put a little bit of joy into people's lives at the same time, isn't it?
Okay, I've just had a call from Garth Galloway. So yeah, guess what? He's going to give me, I'll see if he can give me 12 minutes. And so we're going to have to, looks like we're going to have to move this one quickly again, Seamus. God, it's been a bad old show. It's a wild weaver. Hey, listen, Seamus, OFC Pro League, really it's had a big start, 7,000, 7,000 to 8,000 at Eden Park. Auckland FC really showing, and a very lucky win last night over Fiji and Buller. And but really, three wins in a row.
Yeah, 3 from 3 for Auckland FC in the new OFC Pro League. They opened up with that New Zealand derby 3-0 win over South Island United a week ago in front of a really healthy crowd at Eden Park, which was great. Backed it up on one of those rain-affected days with a 3-1 win over Vanuatu United. And it was a bit of an arm wrestle against Buller, who had a goal disallowed. Roy Krishna strayed into an offside position. They were down to 10 men, Auckland, and managed to hold on for a win. So Luke Casserly and the whole club, I think, will be really happy with their first steps into this new world. They'll rest, recuperate, and get on a flight to go up to Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea as Series 2 kicks off next week. But the other New Zealand team, South Island United, only had two matches so far. A good win, a lucky win. VAR has played a huge part in this series so far. And they pulled it right back to an incident on halfway after Owen Smith, the Kiwi playing for Vanuatu United, had scored what I thought was a really well-deserved and well-worked equaliser, only to have it scrubbed out. But yeah, look, South Island, I think they'll get better and better as this competition progresses. You know, they've got a really good, well-balanced squad. I think they're well-disciplined and well-coached by Rob Sherman, who himself is a really experienced campaigner, not only as a coach, but also in terms of having led Fiji in the past. So he's got some knowledge about what they might be going into as this OFC Pro League continues. But they're 1-1, 3-0 loss to Auckland, and a win over Vanuatu. And their match against Buller was scrubbed out by wild weather. And I'm hearing that match we picked up during the Solomon Islands leg of this competition a little bit down the line. So they might be extending their stay in Honiara. Two matches today, Eamon, still to go. The final two matches of Series 1 sees South Melbourne take on PNG Hikari in the late afternoon match. But getting us underway today will be my team, the Solomon Kings, up against Tahiti United. Yep. Tahiti were really they were really unlucky against South Melbourne. It was right up in the stoppage time where they ended up losing 2-1 in that game. Solomon's won over PNG Hikari United in the first round. I think they've got more to give. I think they could be one of the competition surprise packages. The blend they have of the Solomon Islands internationals that they've got in their squad and the one outstanding Jez Losthouse, the Australian player with a little bit of A-League experience, and the Japanese player as well who scored the winner. They could be really interesting. So here's hoping we can get two games today. I'm not sure what the weather's like there up in Auckland.
It's crap. Absolute crap.
Yeah. I do wonder even if that A-League game later this afternoon, Auckland versus Central Coast, might get affected too after the Ed Sheeran concert at Go Media.
Well, yeah, I know. God. Never trust Ipswich supporters, do you?
That's right.
I'm just looking at the thing. It's pretty windy and it's a bit wet, so we don't know. But yeah, looking at it, obviously South Melbourne will be looking at them. I still think Auckland FC's actually look like probably the side to beat in this competition. Hey, Seamus, reality kicked in for the Phoenix last night. Newcastle Jets 4, Wellington Phoenix 1. Newcastle Jets, I think they're the ones to watch in this A-League at the moment. They're the best form team.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I thought it was a disappointing one for Wellington fans, but Newcastle were outstanding. I think Box Office Jets is the nickname that the commentators have been given them. Well, I think they scored Lockie Bayliss, the New Zealand Youth International, after 26 seconds. And, you know, they were irresistible yesterday. They're up to second, equal on points with Auckland, who played later today. But Wellington were just blown away. Probably for me, the only bright spark of that game was the new signing on loan, Katum, who scored on debut, a consolation goal late in the game. He looked like a really good player. If they can get Josh Oluwemi back in goal as soon as possible, I think Eamon McCarron has done an outstanding job so far in the six games that he's had. But once again last night, I feel like he maybe that inexperience just shone through just a little bit in a couple of those goals that perhaps a goalkeeper with a bit more experience like Oluwemi might have been able to marshal the defence in front of him. But McCarron's been excellent. Take nothing away from his performances. Two clean sheets so far, but I think if Oluwemi is close to full fitness, he'll slot straight back into that number one shirt. So, yeah, after a purple patch that Wellington had been experiencing, a little bit of dose of reality, as you say. But Newcastle, very, very good side, and they're hot on the heels of Auckland FC, who are in action, hopefully, later today against 11th place Central Coast Mariners, who, you know, on the table, this should be a comfortable win for Auckland FC. But as you and I know, and as we've spoken about, they've been a bit of a yo-yo side, haven't they? Up and down. They lost last week on Friday against Melbourne City away. If they can and rely on the form of Lockie Brook and Jesse Randall, who are outstanding at the moment, they should account for Central Coast Mariners. But I do think they miss the leadership of Hiroki Sakai,
yep,
who unfortunately has picked up another hamstring injury and is unlikely to play today. So, look, let's see what the weather gods say, whether that match goes ahead. The last time it was wet and wild up in Auckland, they lost to that Newcastle Jets team, but the Port fans will be hoping that the A-League side can emulate what the OFC Pro League team are doing and get a win in Auckland today.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we go to Phoenix Woman versus Adelaide. Another signing for the Phoenix. Very unlucky last week, but a win here and that probably puts them in the top four.
Yeah, the other news coming out of Wellington Phoenix A-League Women was CJ Bott announced her pregnancy, so she's gone for the rest of the year. So poor old Bev Priestman. You know, some of these marquee players like Samba, like CJ Bott, they're dropping left, right and centre. But I see they've signed Mackenzie Anthony, who scored 23 goals in 25 games in the League of Ireland, another US striker. Michaela Woods was excellent in that 2-0 away win over Canberra last week. And the young guns, Pia Vlock, and Zoe Benson, really starting to step to the fore for this team. Adelaide, you know, they lost, they won midweek against Newcastle. I wonder whether two games in a week is going to be a lot for this Adelaide side. I'm picking Wellington to beat Adelaide tomorrow afternoon at Pōrero Park, and he's hoping for a big crowd to come up and support. They had great support at home last time out, and hoping that those Phoenix fans come out and support the team coming up again tomorrow. And I know next we're going to go to our EPL picks, which
now,
I am horrendous, mate.
I tell you what, we wouldn't be able to pick our nose at the moment. This is how bad we were. 2 out of 10, Seamus.
Yeah,
10.
I reviewed it this morning and I did see 2 out of 10. But look, here's the thing, Eamon. I want to give myself and maybe give you a little bit of leeway here. Your team, Man United, and my team, Liverpool, by my estimation, they've been poor this year. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Well,
so our two teams have been poor this year, but they're sitting in fourth and fifth. So how crazy is the English Premier League at the moment when you've got two teams that are coughing and spluttering their way through a season but are still sitting so high on the table? So it's no wonder we can't pick a result, even if we closed our eyes and picked it out of a hat, because these results are all over the place.
Absolutely. So we started off West Ham versus Sunderland. We'll do the first four games. Burnley versus Spurs, Manchester City versus Wolves, and AFC Bournemouth versus Liverpool. Bill Foley, I love you, mate. Bill Foley, I love you. But we'll start off on that first game.
Look, Hammers fans are going to love me this week because I'm going to tip them to beat Sunderland at home.
No, they're not.
They're still in the relegation zone, but I'm going to say West Ham are going to beat Sunderland. Prove me wrong, West Ham fans. Prove me wrong.
Burnley versus Spurs. I think this one's a sit on the fence one.
Look, I'm gonna rethink my strategy this week, and I'm gonna suggest that two of the three teams in the bottom in the relegation zone win their matches, and I'm gonna say Burnley beat Spurs after that 1-1 draw with Liverpool last week. I think Burnley look like they could be a team on the rise, so I'm gonna say Burnley beat Spurs and put more pressure on poor old Frank there, the manager at Tottenham.
Okay, Manchester City versus Wolves, and I'm going to say this right now. I don't believe at any time Pep Guardiola has been under so much pressure in his coaching career.
I agree with you. I really do. And look, I've already tipped the two other sides that are in the relegation zone to win their matches, but on this one, I can't go past Manchester City. I know Pep's a man under pressure, but I just think they've got too much quality for Wolves at the moment. So I'm going to tip the home team again. That's three home teams out of three matches so far that I'm tipping to win.
Okay, Bournemouth versus Liverpool. I know which way you're going here.
Well, I'm going to break the home team wins in this one. I think Liverpool win midweek win over Marseille. Sorry, in the Champions League suggests to me that Liverpool should be too strong for Bournemouth. But these are famous last words, Eamon, when I suggest a one-sided result like this to my team, Liverpool.
Then we go Monday, Newcastle versus Aston Villa, Brentford versus Nottingham Forest, the big one, Arsenal versus Manchester United, and on Tuesday, Everton versus Leeds. The first one, I think this one's probably the match of the round.
Newcastle versus Aston Villa, I agree, is a blockbuster on paper. Villa are flying high. I think they missed a chance to leapfrog Manchester City last week in second place, but I think they'll be too strong for Newcastle, who themselves have put them, the Magpies are back in the conversation, but I think Aston Villa win that one up at St James's Park. What else have we got there? We've got Arsenal versus Man United, you suggested. Well, I think Arsenal win that one. Sorry for the Red Devils fans out there. I'm imagining you're picking Man United to win this game with Carrick and temporary charge. You're back in Arsenal.
Arsenal, I think if they cannot beat Manchester United at home, they don't deserve to win the league.
I think you're right there. I've got Fulham Brighton on my list, which is a mid-table derby. I'm going to suggest that game finishes a draw. What else? We've got Crystal Palace versus Chelsea.
I
never know which team turns up for Chelsea. So I'm going to sit on the fence and say that one finishes a draw as well, that London derby. Brentford versus Nottingham Forest. Forest sitting just outside the relegation zone. Brentford have been high-flying, but they hit a road bump last week. But I tip Brentford to get back to winning ways. And the last one, as you say, Everton versus Leeds. Look, I like Leeds. I really do. I think Leeds could win that one away over Everton. So I'm going to tip the Whites there to beat Everton at home on Merseyside.
Well, thank you, Seamus, for helping me out. It looks like I've found our other guest. So unfortunately, the weird chats we have, thank you for coming on the air early for us. It's always great to hear that. And a big apologies to Robert Thompson. We didn't play your ad. We will. I'll endeavour to do that next week because, believe me, he is he seriously wants to talk to both of us about our EPL picks. So hopefully,
I was actually thinking this week of outsourcing my picks to Robert himself. So maybe I get in contact with him midweek this week and get him to do my.
Listen. I'm going to pass you on the number to him. I'll give you a number.
I'll tell you what, if I get less than five, let's say I outsource my picks to Robin and we'll see if he can do better.
Yeah, he can text them to both of us. So yeah.
Very good. All right, mate. You have a great weekend.
Yeah, cheers.
Stay warm, stay dry, stay safe.
Yeah, and absolutely. Thanks, Seamus. Cheers, mate. Seamus Martin, so just give me a minute, guys. I'm going to just get Garth Galloway on next, so yep.
All over when you held me tight. Now I feel the pain taking over since you.
Well, we got him. We've got him at the top cricket commentator, the best dressed cricket commentator in the world, Garth Galloway. Good morning to you, mate.
Thank you very much for your usual plaudits. Good morning, Eamon. Sorry, I've been a little bit elusive this morning.
No worries at all, Garth. It's just a busy old time. It's a busy old time. We've got a long weekend in Auckland, and guess what? The weather is terrible. Anyway, let's have a look at these first. Let's have a look at these first two 2020s. Of course, this first one. The first one, New Zealand lost 200. India 238 for 7. Sharma 84. Singh 44. Good bowling, but Jacob Duffy 2 for 27. In reply, 1 New Zealand. And 190 for 7. Glenn Phillipson really was smacking the ball around, and of course good support by Mark Chapman, who has been under pressure in this team.
Yeah, he has. I thought, I mean, his international record's not too bad, Chapman, but he is under pressure. You know, batting at 6 might be the position that suits him. You know, there are obviously other players still to come in, Eamon, before the World Cup. But gee, New Zealand are having a really a good look inside, which is on top of its game, aren't they? You know, this Indian side is very imposing. And I thought actually in that first game, I mean, the thing that really impressed me was I thought Jacob Duffy was the best of the New Zealand bowlers by a long shot. Four overs, 2 for 27. Very interesting to see him going over there, playing in the subcontinent. He has all the reps on him, and rightly so. He's been the number one T20 bowler in the world. I think he's at about number 5 now. And to see him go over there and perform in that way when players like, you know, Abhishek scored 84 off 35, and Suriyama 32 off 22. It was a really credible performance, I thought. I also thought that Christian Clark did very well. He misfielded a couple, you might recall, Eamon. He had the absolute horrors in the field. It was cruel, actually. And to be honest, I don't think he did too much wrong. Those were very strange spinning deliveries after the ball pitched. But, you know, 4 overs, 1 for 40, I thought was a good performance by him, backing up a really credible effort in the ODI series. And so I thought, yeah, New Zealand did well. And in that chase, to get to 190 for 7, while they were still a long way short, I thought they batted pretty well. They lost Conway early and then Ravindra. But Phillips's effort was very good. Chapman batting well as well. But gee, last night, what a frightening day that must have been for New Zealanders.
When you look at it, there was a lot of starts but no finishes, and just the way India were just so clinical last night. They were just, this morning, they just absolutely were immense.
Well, they were brutal, and this is the thing that you and I have talked about it, but I've talked to you about, or mentioned, you know, my concern about, and I talked about this during the England series, you might recall, but I just felt that players like Phil Salt, Josh Butler and so on, just striking, you know, Salt at 170, Butler at 150, through a career where he's nearly scored 4,000 T20 runs. You know, they're just players who, I was concerned about the New Zealand strike rate, and I remain that way. It's very, you know, these top sides are thrashing the ball around, and we saw it last night. As you say, no real starts. Conway and Seifert getting out when the score was 43, and that set New Zealand back a bit. On the positive side, a good performance by Ravindra, 44 from 26. And Santner, of course, doing a marvellous job at the end with 6 fours and a 6 in his 47 from 27. But 208 for 6 didn't really feel like it was going to be enough. I think New Zealand struggled against their spin bowlers. But, you know, India didn't go out there and just crawl, did they? They lost 2 wickets early on. Sampson out when the score was 6 and at the same score, Abhishek. So New Zealand very much on top, with Henry and Duffy taking a wicket apiece. But then it was the Kishan and the Suri Kumar Yadav show. Unbelievable hitting. And we learned a bit about the New Zealand attack last night.
Absolutely. And, of course, Adam Millman's out for the World Cup. So Kyle Jameson's got a lot of pressure on him. Just while we're talking, obviously at the Sunday morning, this series victory in India in the One Day Internationals, just your thoughts on that. And while you're doing, I'll let you keep talking while I have to catch up with another guest, so you take it away, Garth.
Give me 10 minutes, I'll be fine. Yeah, no, that's fine. No problem at all, Eamon. Look, I thought the New Zealand, the One Day series was an extraordinary achievement for New Zealand to win 2-1 over there. You know, I just thought to lose the first game and then come back and win those the next two was a remarkable performance. And when you look at Mitchell's effort, his batting is as good as we'll see by any New Zealand player in an ODI series. And to do it in India, to get 2 centuries and an 84 not out, just a remarkable performance by a very fine player who's continued to show some good form, I might add, in the T20 series as well. So, yeah, fabulous. They deserve the plaudits. I think Rob Walter's done a great job with them, and he's juggled things around. But you can see now with this New Zealand side that selection's going to be an absolute key. And we're looking at, so Jameson didn't play last night. He did play in the first game. Yeah. Henry came back 1 for 41 from 3. Great to see him back. But we saw Zach Folkes, and you know, these figures, 3 overs, none for 67. He went for 22 runs and over.
Yeah.
Just absolutely savage, the poor fella. And it'll, you know, they need to get around him and support him. He's a good cricketer. I think he's a good white ball cricketer. But again, this will be part of his development, just to see just how good some of these players are in conditions, you know, unlike New Zealand, where playing against England, where the ball was nipping around and seaming and swinging and so on. So, a brilliant series win over there. And now a lot of work ahead in the T20 stuff.
Yeah, and of course in the 2020s, where obviously Tim Seifert's back, Finn Allen is playing in the Big Bash final tonight, so they will be coming into the team. He will be coming into the team. The next 3 2020s will be interesting. And you know, the concerning talk for me, Garth, is when players come out and say we deserve to be in a World Cup final, etc., before the tournament started. That really gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Sorry, I missed that. Who was saying that?
Finn Allen mentioned on another station that they hope that, you know, they think they're looking towards a World Cup final. I think he said we're due a World Cup final.
Gee, well, that's big talk. I would be concerned about that. I mean, I think, you know, Allen's form in the Big Bash has been incredible. He's been, you know, one of the stars of it, really. You have to take your hat off to him. His striking's been incredible. But let's see what he does. I anticipate he will absolutely butcher the Minnows. And then I'm very interested to see how he plays, you know, if New Zealand get through the first series as they should and into those knockout games. I'm going to be very interested to see, you know, he has to back that up. And this is his world stage, and this is a test of how good Finn Allen is. Ignore the games against the Minnows and see how he goes against the top sides under a lot of pressure. You know, he should do well. He should, based on his performance in the Big Bash, but it's another step up. And, I think our ODI side is exceptional. I think our T20 side is a step down, I'm afraid. And that's, you know, a lot of the players are the same players, but I just think the other sides are better ball strikers. Yeah. And a lot of the bowlers have better variations as well.
Well, Garth, on that note, thank you for making yourself available.
Yeah, sorry about
you. No, no worries at all, mate. And it's always great having a chat cricket to you. You know, your knowledge is so brilliant. So have a great rest of the day down in Christchurch.
Thank you, and we'll talk soon. Next weekend.
Next weekend,
that?
I think I'm going to text you on Tuesday.
Good on you, mate.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Garth Galloway, fantastic. What a good bloke. Anyway, now we go across the ditch. Good, and it's a Happy New Year, a bit of a late Happy New Year. For the first time this year for the Australian View, Gordon Bray, good morning to you.
Good morning, Eamon. Yes, we're in for a scorcher here in Sydney and also in Melbourne at the Australian Open. I think we're looking at plus 30 degrees.
Oh, so, goodness.
I'll step my two little grandchildren off to the beach. we'll be uninterrupted in this broadcast.
Oh, that's okay. It's been one of those mornings. But, Garth, looking at the Australian Open, good crowds, and, of course, the heat there must be. You think about it. You know, you imagine being on centre court on some of those outer courts. So, God, it must be. It's probably about 100 degrees out there.
Well, I think today they're expecting 40 degrees. That's going to be murderous, absolutely murderous. I remember when the surface was first put down at the venue, and you could actually fry an egg in 20 seconds. It was so difficult, so hot, like a red-hot stove. But it's going to be treacherous today, and I'm sure there are going to be heat breaks if it does get too intense.
Yeah, and I think I've had a look at this Australian Open. There's not been any major upsets at this stage. Probably Pellegrini been knocked out, but that's about it. You know, there's not been any big upsets. But looking at it, local hopes. Who does the local Australian hopes go with?
Well, I think first of all, answering that assertion of yours, yes, Sinner, Alcaraz, and the Joker. They seem to be dominating the men's singles so far. And Joker, he claims that he doesn't have the juice now to Matt Sinner and Alcaraz, but he certainly has been in scintillating form. As far as Australia's big hope, well, tonight, world number six, Alex de Minaur. He's certainly come through with a big... He's not playing tonight, but he's come through with a fantastic win over Francis Tiafoe. Straight set, 6-3, 6-4, 7-5. So that was a very big win by de Minaur, and he's certainly taken his game up another level. He's now able to really stay in points. And I suppose there's still a query over his serve, the strength and power of his serve, but you can't knock the way he's been performing. So he's through to his fifth consecutive fourth round. So he's Australia's big hope in the men's singles. And tonight, on centre court, a huge occasion for Madison Inglis. She's 28 years of age. It's quite a fairy tale, this one, Eamon. She actually saw off match points in her first round of qualifying, yet here she is now through to this point against Naomi Osaka, the two-time Australian Open winner and a four-time champion. So That is certainly going to be a huge test for her in front of a packed crowd on the Rod Laver Arena.
And when we look at it, like, I think probably the last Australian male to win the Australian Open would be Mark Edmondson.
Yeah, well, it's going back a long way, isn't it?
You're talking generations after generations. God,
yeah.
You had black hair when you were working for the ABC, Gordon.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? Probably 30 years ago now, at least, last time I fronted for the ABC. Actually, we had a reunion of ABC commentators during the week.
How was Mr. Maxwell?
Jimmy Maxwell was there. We had Peter Longman. We had Peter Wilkins. Wilco is now the deputy mayor of Shoalhaven, still a very keen punter. And Peter Shipway, of course, who you spoke to during the Sydney Hobart.
Yep.
And, it was our annual reunion, and lots of lies were told. I think back in those old days with the ABC, we used to go down to the Cruising Yacht Club at lunchtime, and Peter Shipway was the general manager, and quite often we'd still be there at 9:30 at night. It had actually merged into dinner, and Shipway would bring the bill out to us, and we'd just screw it up and throw it in the harbour. And then they'd rewrite it again, and we'd screw it up and throw it in the harbour. So, yeah, they were fun days, but, yeah, the old ABC connection still quite vibrant.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, then there's a Big Bash cricket final, Perth Scorchers versus Sydney Sixers in Perth. You're probably expecting a record crowd in Perth for this. And I've looked at this Big Bash league, you know, going back to when it first started, huge crowds. The crowds are there, but not as big as they were. I don't know what it is. I think whether we've had too much, it's kind of like when you're having your diet, you can have too much red meat. Is 2020 turning into too much red meat for the average cricket pundit in Australia?
Well, all eyes in Australia were on the Ashes series, and although we didn't get full value there in terms of playing time, it still was, for me, was an enthralling series. I know a lot of people have knocked it, but it was great theatre all the way through. Australia, deserved to win the series emphatically, as they did. But England, I think, despite all of their weaknesses, their fielding, their poor catching, their self-destruction at times, still put themselves into winning positions, and the fact that they did win a test. So it was a genuine contest, and then you get the Big Bash starting, and it's very hard to refocus on that. I have watched a couple of the games. In fact, I actually tuned in the night Steve Smith scored his 100 from 41 balls, and it looked as though he I think he was on 99 after 36 balls, and he wasn't aware that the fastest ever Big Bash 100 was 39 balls. So I think he blocked the ball and then hit one straight to a fieldsman. I think he would have been a bit more urgent if he'd known that he was on the verge of setting that record. But he's the key, I think, for this match in Perth at Optus Stadium. It will be a sellout crowd, as you say. No doubt about that in Perth. And Mitchell Marsh's boys, I think, have got a start favourite. The Sixers last night won against the Hobart Hurricanes. And, again, Steve Smith, top scorer. I think he's the key for the Sixers. But they literally got to have an overnight sleep. They'll wake up today. They'll travel over to Perth. No training whatsoever. So they'll be playing on adrenaline against the Perth team tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, last week we're a week on from last week where the big news came here in New Zealand. Scott Robinson was sacked. More or less sacked as the All Blacks coach. What has been the reaction of rugby people in Australia to this to the sacking?
Look, in the circles I move in, and everyone I've spoken to, I think gobsmacked. We have huge respect for Razor. He doesn't fit the normal mold of an All Black coach. But that said, you can't knock his record coming up through Super Rugby. And, the All Blacks, I guess, a 74% winning ratio. The Wallabies would die for a win ratio like that. But, despite the fact that he retained the Bledisloe Cup, I would say a huge surprise here in Australia that Scott Robertson was sacked as coach. And you hear rumours that it was some player power getting involved. I hope that wasn't the case.
I can probably confirm from my sources, he'd lost the dressing room, Gordon.
He'd lost the dressing room, had he? Well, then you've got to make the hard calls. And, I have huge respect for David Kirk. And clearly, the timing's not great for New Zealand. Mark Robinson, I see, is he's moving back to Australia, your CEO. But I think the real...
Do you guys want him to be CEO of your union?
Yeah. But I really think I think the moment that really sent an earthquake across New Zealand rugby and sent huge fractures across New Zealand rugby was that game in Wellington against the Springboks. 36 unanswered points, 6 tries, and in the end it was a total capitulation by the All Blacks. I've never seen that before. And, I think if you're looking at one moment that sealed his fate or certainly put him on the downslide, that game, that was a pretty horrendous result, wasn't it, for New Zealand rugby?
Yep. It certainly was. It certainly was. And I think, even before that loss in Wellington against Argentina, I just think he may have ran out of ideas, which unfortunately happened to the poor guy. He'll come back. I can tell you something. He'll come back as a coach because I don't think he's that bad a coach, Gordon. Hey, we've got Super Rugby coming up in 20 days now. Now, are us Kiwis just going to dominate it, or have you Aussies really got a chance? Have you Aussies teams got a chance of stopping that New Zealand stranglehold?
Well, it's certainly it seems to be the same story each year, doesn't it? The local derbies here in Australia are very competitive, but when it comes to taking on the top, the elite New Zealand sides, the Australian team seem to come up short. The one side that has been consistent is the Brumbies under Stephen Larkin, but they're getting ransacked in a sense by New South Wales, who seem to be fortifying their ranks and taking a lot of key players from the Brumbies to the Waratahs. You've got to remember that the Brumbies are now run by Rugby Australia, so they've sort of centralised the administration, and I think that's working against the Brumbies. The Waratahs, I'm sorry, the jury is still out on the Waratahs. Dan McKellar, his team started the season well last year, and then it was a slow fade. It was all downhill, and I'm just not convinced that they have it all together. I guess Simon Conn's doing a great job with the Force, and the other hope is that Les Kiss is going to take over from Joe Smith halfway through the year, is that the Queensland Reds do have a good culture. I see Harry Wilson is going to be missing the early part of the season. But, I think maybe the Queenslanders this year will be the big hope. I know people are talking up the Waratahs, but as I say, I'm not convinced.
Yeah, it's how would you say it's like I've been speaking to a few experts here, experts here with the Crusaders and the Hurricanes, they all say, well, don't forget about the Australian teams, but really for Australian rugby, and the ACT Brumbies have been the shining light. But yeah, I'd watch that Force side. I think they're beginning to gain a little bit of momentum, Gordon.
Well, it all comes down to coaching, and if you've got a top coach and he's got good staff, and you've got the players on side, and you've got the culture there. I think that's where Simon Cron and Stephen Larkin have done really well. But, yeah, I agree with you. I know the Waratahs in that sort of post-season competition with the Super Rugby teams, they did beat the Western Force over in Perth, and it was the young players coming through. I think Lachlan McCaffrey took over the coaching of the New South Wales team, and there were some really promising young players who really stood up. And Sid Harvey is one who came through from the under-20s team and the Australian Sevens team. He's one guy that I'd be looking out for this year, the red-haired left-footer. He plays fullback or wing, prodigious goal kicker, but I think he can really kick on this year. But, yeah, look, I think, I'd be looking. It's always a murderous itinerary for the Force. It's the only other team that has to face that sort of trudgery across Australia and New Zealand and Fiji is the Drua. But you see that Jeff Miller, the great Wallaby flanker, who was an assistant coach for Rod McQueen in 1999 when we won the World Cup.
Yep.
He's now the CEO of the Fijian Drua. So that is just a wonderful appointment to have him there. And I can see that. Let's not forget the Fijians too. They're going to cause a few problems for not only the Australian side but also the New Zealand side.
Mate, you go to La Toko. They're so hard to beat. Especially in Fiji, and believe me, at times, you know, Fijian rugby. You know, I think especially in the 15-man game, I think they're very much on the rise. They can upset anyone on their day.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's all down to money and coaching, and that seems to be coming in from World Rugby, and getting those good coaches as well, and also getting their fitness levels to where they can match the Aussie and the New Zealand teams, and I think we're now seeing that, and particularly at home in those sweltering conditions, they're always pretty tough to beat in front of the home crowd.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Bray, thank you so much for making yourself available. I've been rushing around like anything today because there were some people that didn't show, and also I had to move around very, very quickly. So thank you for your patience with me today.
You're always very nimble on your feet, and that's your forte, I think, Damon. You didn't. We should mention also that Angus Crichton is coming across from the Roosters at the end of the season. That is a big buy. I don't know where they're going to play him. He's a forward in rugby league and a very good one for Australia and New South Wales. But there is some talk that maybe he could be moving to the centres with Dualii. So that'll be very interesting to see the two Roosters fronting up. Maybe for Australia at the World Cup in 2027.
And I will say this, it seems as though I know for the last few years that rugby league has been taken from rugby union, but it looks as though the tide has turned now with rugby union now taking from rugby league.
Well, I hope you're right, but don't forget that we've had a massive debt in rugby Australia. They wiped that off with the Lions tour, but still, I think it's all precarious, and they really got to watch the penny. So let's wait and see there. But certainly, hosting the World Cup is going to be a massive financial bonus for Australia, as long as it's well managed and well spent.
Absolutely. Anyway, Gordon, I'll leave you to it. Have a wonderful weekend, and we will catch up next month.
Amen. Look forward to it, mate, and best wishes to all your listeners.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Cheers, bye.
Okay, bye.
That was Gordon Bray. So next up, we go to the panel.
Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone, as the sun went down, as I crossed the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return, and the rocks might melt, and the sea may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. The hardest thing. Some say life will beat you down, break your heart, steal your crown. So it started out for God knows where. I guess I'll know when I get there. I'm learning to fly around the clouds.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Yes, it's been one of those shows, but we're at the ends, and it's the panel. Just a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub, Force Electrical, Water Smart, Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson, for their ongoing support. Anyway, so we might as well rip into it now. On line one, the Mouth of the South, Lee Piper. Good morning, Lee.
Get up.
And on line two, our favourite Pom, living in Wellington, but a good bloke. And I will send the check, and the check's in the mail. Miles Davis, morning.
I meant to be sending you a check, you silly sod. I'll tell you what, the way you're stuttered there at the beginning, you couldn't remember what show it was. I think you've been down Father Ted's all day.
We were actually thinking about doing a live show from Father Ted's, but yeah, I don't trust myself, guys. I seriously don't trust myself. Anyway, I'm going to start off with you, Piper. A week on from the Razor sacking, and you know, what have we learned out of this, and what are we still to learn? We're hearing that Jamie Joseph is likely to do it. Tony Brown's coming. No, he's not coming. I just don't get what is going on. What are you hearing, Lee?
Well, I think there's a couple of surprises in this for me, and that would be, look, I think the way that they handled the press conference last week and the announcement and the fact that Kirk, you know, fronted up was all, I think they earned great kudos for that. I think that's all a tick. And we talked about this a little bit in that they definitely obviously cleaned house, and you can see that the Kirk influence already. So I think there had to be a shake-up within NZ Rugby, so I think people have applauded that. What I don't understand in this is, in some ways, Amon, it's actually worse than the netball, because as I think I said to you, when the netball thing hit and they sat down, or they suspended Noel Lean, they had talked to Yvette McCaws and Jury about taking over for the English series and the Constellation Cup about 3 or 4 days before they basically suspended her. What it seems with this is they didn't talk to anybody, and I would have thought that they would have had a definitive plan B. We've announced that Razor's not the coach. We start the process on Monday. We complete, because they said we're going to complete it immediately. And within 2 weeks, we've got it in place. Jamie Joseph's a coach. Tony Brown's his assistant. Joe Schmidt's coming back as the director of rugby. And let's get on with it. They haven't done any of that. Jamie Joseph is still at Highlanders training. He's still basically, and he does keep his cards pretty close to his chest. But they've just allowed the rumours to go on. And I know that they were talking to the Super Rugby franchises about this and how it was going to play out. And they've delayed it and delayed it. Oh, it's going to be Monday. No, it's going to be Friday. It'll definitely be next week. And we're 2 weeks down the track, or, you know, a bit, not quite, and we're still none the wiser. So I think, yeah, poor, really, I think, in how they've handled the process so far. And my understanding of it is that they will be closer to trying to come to a solution, but I think we're all speculative and we don't really know. What is interesting, just to add quickly before we get Miles' thoughts, is I've never heard Tony Brown do interviews like he's done. He's done interviews locally. I've interviewed him a few times. He keeps it very close to his chest as well. He's suddenly coming out and interviewing a lot, and I still wouldn't be surprised if Jamie Joseph gets the job that a call goes into South Africa and he basically says, look, this is my best mate, I want to go, and they go, fine.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think the big thing is here, Miles, is just that, you know, with our sporting organisation, we make decisions, but we tend to differ around. What's been your thoughts on this, Miles?
Well, something I've been trying to get off my chest. I've been dying to get off my chest ever since it happened. And it's to sort of take a step back and look at it. Firstly, you know, whether Razor should have been sacked, you know, I don't know. If you go on his record, his record's better than Foster's. So, you know, okay, the South Africa defeat, maybe that added a lot in there. You can't deny that player power had a massive influence, especially by the looks of it from the outside, Ardie Savea. Now, one thing, I remember years ago talking to Dave Rennie when he just took over at the Chiefs. I was interviewing him, and he'd lost 15 players from the squad before, and I said to him, you know, Dave, is that a bad thing there, or is it a good thing? You know, and he said, well, obviously, it's a bad thing losing that talent and experience. He said, but on the other side, it's a good thing, because you've got, when you go into somewhere with a lot of senior players, and they're all established, and they think they know it all, it's really hard for you to set the culture. And I think what's happened there, if you look back, Graham Henry had Hansen with him for ages. So he's already in the mix, all the players know him, he moves up. Then he has Foster with him, and Foster moves up. Now suddenly you've got someone totally from the outside going in. Players feel alienated. They feel, well, that's not the way we do things, you know, because they've been used to doing it all the time with these other guys. So he cops the thing. Remember Mark Hammett when he went to the Hurricanes?
Yep.
He copped the same thing. Players having an attitude. You talk about culture. What about the culture at the Crusaders? Weren't there loads of All Blacks playing at the Crusaders? Weren't they successful all the time? I don't remember, Pipes might know, but I don't remember them moaning about, oh, no, we don't like the coach, we don't like the culture, and we want him sacked. I mean, I know they were winning, but you know what I mean? It's like all this culture cobblers. I reckon it's just they didn't like a new guy coming in and telling them what he thought should be done when they'd been doing it for so long a different way. And I think that's something that I don't think many people have taken into account. And, you know, it paid me off, to be perfectly honest. I'll put my hand in the ring, I'll put my hand up. I like Razor. I'm very fond of Razor. I've had some laughs with him over the years, some great interviews and chats. But I don't think he was treated fairly. Secondly, Jamie Joseph, good coach, obviously a top choice. But for me, Dave Rennie. Dave Rennie, when he went to the Chiefs, he won two titles on the trot. Right? First year, second year, he won both of them. He took, I think I'm right, perhaps I'll tell you if I'm wrong, he took the under-20s to three consecutive World Cup wins. Manawatu, he's coached Australia, he's coached in Scotland. For me, he would be the guy that I would do. But again, I'm biased because he used to play with Wellington, so...
That's fair enough.
That should effectively rule them out. But I think what's interesting about what Miles says is, yep, I think that there's a lot to like about the Jamie Joseph Tony Brown combination. There is less to like about the Jamie Joseph proposition. And I think if it's not the two, in other words, it's the one, I think Dave Rennie absolutely comes into play. And the more this drags on, I think the more likely it is to go with the Dave Rennie.
I'd agree on that, and from what Miles was saying, like, obviously, you know, you look at Jamie Joseph, Miles, you can't have, it's kind of like with Brian Clough with Peter Taylor when we look at a football analogy on it, when it's, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, I think Pipes makes a good point there. They are definitely a combo, and you see the way that it works, and like Pipes saying, mate, Tony Brown's been out there really being open about it. You know, he's doing the party line as well, saying, you know, I'm committed to South Africa for 4 years, blah, blah, blah. But if he gets the nudge, I'm sure they'll let him go. You know, it's a huge, they'll realise what a huge opportunity it is for him, and I'm sure they're going to let him go. With the Dave Rennie thing, imagine Dave Rennie with Joe Schmidt in the background. I mean, Joe Schmidt for me is, and again, I'm very fond of Joe. Joe Schmidt for me is like the new Wayne Smith.
Yep.
You know, in terms of he's, you know, you just listen to him speak. You know, he relates to the players, but he's firm. He knows he knows the game inside out, and he's successful. So, I think their combo with, if Schmidt was up for it, I think that would be brilliant.
I think.
Well, I think any combination in my world would have Joe Schmidt. Whether it's Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown or Dave Rennie, I think your director of rugby and your guy running the cutter, like Dwayne Smith, is Joe Schmidt. And no matter what they do moving forward, he's the guy I would put in that role.
Absolutely. Miles, we'll just move on from there. Miles, Black Caps, obviously they lost the first two 2020s, but this win against India, one-day series victory in India, I think that was a great occasion for New Zealand cricket.
Yeah, I mean, It is, obviously. You go, it's a tough place to win. But I don't think it goes anywhere near the big thrashing they gave them in the test series over there not long ago. You know, for me, that really proved that. And I begin to wonder whether they've got inside the Indians' heads. You know, because you don't win too many one-day series in India, and they bat down to 1,000. You know, they've got so many top cricketers. So, it's huge. Take the win. But for me, you know, one-dayers could go one way or the other. Same with T20s. I mean, yesterday, you look at the score, 206. That's a great score in a T20 game, especially when you take a couple of their wickets early on, and then suddenly, bam, 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 you get two maniacs in the middle, and it turns it all around. So I think it's great preparation for them as well for the World Cup. You couldn't have better preparation for it. And I think the Black Caps, if they don't have their little bit of bad luck that they normally do, have got to be right up there in terms of favouritism.
Yeah, so you still got to look at India, you still got to look at Australia. Lee, what was your thoughts on that victory?
Well, I think the one day, I agree with Miles, I think the test victory was far superior because it's just, it's Scotland beating New Zealand, isn't it? At Eden Park, it's like literally impossible to do. That said, I think a couple of things. One, I think the surprise of it was we've got a whole lot of players not there. Like, we didn't have really any bowling attack at all. So our frontline bowlers weren't there. We had the return of Jamieson, although he got tapped about a bit. But we were unearthing guys that I've honestly never heard of. But again, it was anchored, both innings were anchored on the back of pretty much Daryl Mitchell, and particularly in that third game, Glenn Phillips as well. So, you know, I watched a little bit of that. We were 5-2, and I'm like, oh, here we go. But the Daryl Mitchell is the unsung hero for me. Like, this is a guy that's, you know, not only thriving in the one-dayers, he's thriving in T20, and he's thriving in Test cricket. So, and he's just getting better as he's getting older. So his role has been pivotal. I think the T20 has been, you know, to Miles' point, we made 206. I think they got them with five overs to go. So imagine if they'd carried on, it would have got me a 300. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of hit and giggle, but I think the experience that they'll get out of that leading into the T20 World Cup will be significant. But for me, the T20 World Cup is just hit and miss. You know, obviously the 50-over format is the one where, you know, you're playing a bit more. But again, it comes back to this test. I think we're second in the test rankings, but we haven't actually played anybody. So it's not like everybody plays everybody and you take the two top teams. It also depends on who you get. And the problem with the test draw is that India, England and Australia, because of the revenue that goes around and to a lesser degree South Africa, they like to play each other a lot because they obviously, it gives them the greatest chance of getting more money. So they've got they're probably the three best teams. So, yeah, it's a bit all over the show. I think there's a lot of cricket on. You know, we're talking also about that, the cricket in terms of the IPL league coming to New Zealand. That's going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons. It's obviously less resulted in the loss of the New Zealand cricket CEO, Scott Wisniewski. So, yeah, lots to go on there. But, yeah, a brilliant performance from the Black Caps with not their B side, but, you know, the best they could conjure up was still too good for India.
Yeah, Pipes, quickly, before, you know, if T20 is such a load of bollocks, you're not going to, why are you lot still moaning about the 2019 World Cup final?
That was 50 over game,
and
you cheated.
Yeah,
I know.
The umpire couldn't count, and
even as a POM, that is, to me, that was just ridiculous. I mean, I walked out for a second thinking, right, that's all over. I went to make a cup of tea. And then I saw what had happened. I thought, you've got to be joking. You've got to be joking. You know, the Black Caps deserve to win that, undoubtedly. All right, let's move on before we start fighting again.
I like it. Okay. I'll just say this to you guys. I'm sick.
Are we focusing on West Ham this week or no?
No. We're going to go there a bit later.
We Tottenham away last week, mate. You're only as good as your last game.
Yeah, I don't know. The championship's looking good, but we'll get to that in a moment. Piper, what's your feelings on these appointments at New Zealand Netball, the interim CEO, etc.?
Not too bad. I think it's the best that they could muster with what they've got. My understanding is they're going to wait until after the Comm Games to appoint a new CEO. Jay Patterson's been around in netball circles for a long time, and she's a pretty solid appointment. I think she was involved in the FIFA Women's World Cup. She's kind of in the group, if you like, so she will be, I guess, widely, or not widely, but I think she'll be seen as a pretty safe, a pretty safe fit. So I think they'll be pretty pleased with that. I think it's really around what is the next steps and where do they go? Do they go to a traditional kind of netball based kind of CEO, or do they look and go, okay, well, we'll look a little bit more outside the square? So it'll depend on what they're kind of looking for a little bit in that. So I think in that regard, probably you'd get a tick there. In regards to the high performance part of it, yeah, obviously a really good appointment there. I've just forgotten the lady's name, but she comes from the Golden State Warriors. She's got a lot of credentials, so I think that was their high performance program will be the better for her being involved. So yeah, I think probably some positive after a pretty, a pretty whirlwind 2025. I think that would be a tick. But obviously, the news coming out this week, you may have read, no broadcast deal in place post the end of this year. ANZ players having to take a 20% pay cut. We talked about this quite a lot last year. And I think I talked about what players can earn in Australia, upwards of 120 grand for the top. In fact, some of them are getting between 120 and 170. Their lowest base players are getting 70, and unfortunately for us, ours are getting somewhere between 31 and 44. So
that's lower than the minimum wage, mate.
Yeah, but I see Steph Bond come out and said, they're doing less. But, I look after a few of these girls.
Yep.
They can't do anything else. It's not like they can go, okay, well, I've got a free day. Well, I'll go and get a job. Like, it's just not like that. So yeah, I think, lots to work through. As I say, Chelsea Lane coming in as the new head of high performance will help.
Yep.
So that's going to be a tick. I think Jane Patterson will do a pretty solid job. What Jane Patterson needs to do is get that broadcast deal done now and start talking to Australia about what a Super League final series might look like in 26 and beyond, just to add some much-needed razzmatazz to a sport that's clearly struggling.
Absolutely. And Miles, now we're going to talk a bit of football here. Obviously, the biggest concern I've got at the moment as we head into a World Cup year, if it goes ahead, which I think it will, is the absence of Chris Wood not playing any football at the moment. I'm really concerned about this, Miles.
I think I'll say right now, he won't be in the squad. There's no way that he's going to take the risk. They were hoping he was going to play the second half of the season for Forest. It looks now that he's going to miss the whole season. That means he won't have had any football. You only get a month between the end of, if that, between the end of the English season, the Premier League season, and the start of the World Cup. And they're just not going to risk it. He's not going to risk it. He won't be fit enough. He won't be match sharp enough. And he's not going to risk his career as much as he's probably the stalwart for up for New Zealand. He's just unbelievable as far as that goes. And you've got to respect that. I don't think he's going to do it. And that really is probably the biggest blow that New Zealand football have for this World Cup, because we know they struggle to score goals. They really have. It's been really poor lately. They've got some great little midfielders, and they're starting to look reasonably good in defence. They've got a couple of good keepers, but they just can't score goals. And that's the one thing that Chris Wood is going to provide for you, plus bringing other players into it as well. So I think that's the biggest hit that New Zealand football could have going into this World Cup. And assuming, as you say, aren't half the teams that are going there, Trump's already banned people from those countries from getting visas?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good way to win it, isn't it? Just ban the country.
The Board of Peace, there's out of the 25 countries invited into it, 11 of them, their citizens are banned from getting visas to visit the States. So, yeah, let's watch this space.
Yeah, but also looking at the A-League at the moment, obviously a bit of Phoenix had a couple of good weeks, but now a bit of a reality check. They're probably taking on the best team in the A-League, at the moment, the Newcastle Jets. But our mob here in Auckland, we've got the Central Coast Mariners. Now, the weather is now beginning to clear here, so hopefully we get 10 or 15,000 down to go media. But what's been your impression of the A-League so far with the Phoenix and Auckland?
The Phoenix should have personally, and I, at the time I said it, chiefly had done his time. and it wasn't going to take him any further and should have gone. I mean, it's lovely to have the loyalty, but loyalty doesn't win you games or fill the stadium with fans. So he should have gone. Auckland, I mean, they've been obviously a massive success in there, but they're starting to show the odd little vulnerability now. I mean, you couldn't expect them to keep on going. It's a competitive one. And as you say, you know, they lost in Newcastle as well, and Newcastle were just, I don't know what's in the water up there, but they've certainly turned it around. And you know, you've got to be looking forward to the playoffs and thinking this side have got to be there or thereabouts. But I don't care who turns up at your lot today or whether you lose 8-0, to be honest. you're just a gaffer.
Oh, hey, well, even worse, I'm originally from Canterbury, so that makes me worse from that
point. I'm already admitting that.
Hey, just one thing, EPL, I'm looking at this, and of course we come to this crucial part of January, obviously transfer windows, but you know, obviously your mob are fighting relegation, my mob are absolutely appalling, but one place off Champions League spots. To me, I look at this, Miles, I think it's Arsenal's to lose.
Very much so, and I think I saw Pep Guardiola saying yesterday that he reckons that Arsenal are the best team in the world at the moment. And I actually did say, because when Declan Rice was 19, I said to my kids, this boy is the best thing I've seen at West Ham since Bobby Moore. And every year he gets better and better. And now that he's at Arsenal, a side that allow him to play, you know, more forward, not having the buddy cover everyone's backside all the time, he's proved it. And to be honest, I don't think you can underestimate the difference that he's made to that side. And they seem to be playing with confidence now. And to be honest, I for once, I can't see them getting beaten in terms of the title.
Anyway, Piper, I just want to thank you for making yourself available. Yes, I'll catch up with you in a week or so's time. And yes, I will be buying the first beer.
That's the only one you ever buy, so yeah, okay, that'll be great.
And Miles, when I'm down to Wellington, the bearsies are on me. Even though I've got short arms and long pockets, I will always buy you a nice
you've got
drink.
Got short everything, mate.
I tell you something that is big as my stomach. I did not notice I didn't say anything else, but yeah, we'll leave it at that. Hey, guys, have a great weekend, and we'll catch up soon. Cheers. Yeah, cheers, Lee. Cheers, Miles.
Cheers, Pipes.
And that's us done for today.
This program was first broadcast on Planet FM, Community Access Media in Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland. You're hearing it on accessmedia.nz thanks to Erirangi Te Motu.